Hello and welcome to the 108th Over the Monster podcast. I'm Matt Corey, nowhere near the Cat Box in Portland, Oregon. This is the 108th episode, but it's really sort of a sub-episode. I was fortunate enough to speak with Brian McPherson from the Providence Journal, whom you can follow on the Twitter machine at Brian MACP, which you should do. We discussed mostly John Lester, really the Red Sox trade deadline, but mostly John Lester and what it says about the Red Sox going forward that they haven't signed him. Will they sign him in the future? What are their plans for 2015 if they're not going to sign him, et cetera, et cetera. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Brian McPherson of the Providence Journal. Okay, as promised, I am here with Brian McPherson from the Providence Journal. Brian, I know we've just been talking off air, but now that we're on, I have to say thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome.
And on your off day as well. We are 2 days ahead of the trade deadline, and the John Lester rumors are flying. What is your, your feel on this? I mean, I keep hearing reports that he's going to get traded 100%, and then I hear reports saying he's not going to get traded. What do you think the outcome's going to be?
I mean, the other day I wrote, you know, kind of definitively for the first time that they should trade him, and that sort of opinion is not something a beat writer usually comes out with, but it just seems so clear that, you know, basically the only reason you hang on to him is if you see a clear path to signing him. And especially some of the back and forth in the last week or so made it clear that, you know, when John Henry said they weren't going to negotiate till after the season, and then the Lester camp made pretty clear, we don't want to negotiate, but if you were to come at us with, you know, a market value offer, we would listen. And the clear implication is that hasn't happened yet. So if you're not going to give Lester a market value offer, you know, if you hadn't done it in spring training, if you hadn't done it at the All-Star break, there's no sign of it happening now. And this team's out. If the other only reason to keep him is if you're contending, you know, that's the Ellsbury scenario a year ago. Obviously, there was no consideration of trading Ellsbury a year ago. But if you're completely out of it, as this team is, it just hanging on to Lester seems like it would represent a huge missed opportunity, given the number of teams that could benefit from a pitcher like him.
Well, so I guess, you know, in that equation, you're weighing, you know, Lester and the chance of signing him, you know, with whatever you might get back, and of course the first round draft pick that you would get if you let him go in free agency. So, you know, given that, it seems very clear the Red Sox aren't going to re-sign him. Before we get into anything else, I would just say, I mean, you and I, we discussed this over Twitter a little bit the other day. I'm sort of bewildered as to why they won't. I mean, I guess it. Well, I'll just ask you, why do you think they are not re-signing him?
I go back and forth on this like a pendulum. Like, I can really, I know there's a lot of people that'll get really upset if they don't re-sign Lester. I don't think I could criticize the decision either way, just because Lester is who he is. He means what he does to the organization, and, you know, if they signed him for 5 and 120, say, like, that's pretty close to market value, and this team can afford it. So there's that. But on the other hand, the track record of these pitchers is just terrible. You know, you look at these guys that, for every Tim Hudson and Mark Burley, you know, it seems like there's 15 Johan Santanas, or Brandon Webb, or now you see CeCe Sabathia, and Justin Verlander seems like he's wearing down, and it just seems to go on and on. And even if you look close at some of the guys who have made it, like a Mark Burley, you know, whose career you would take. You know, if you signed Lester to a $100 million deal and you got basically what Burley's done the last 5 years, you'd take that. But he throws 83, so he's not dependent. He's not dependent on velocity, but he's also probably not getting hurt because he doesn't throw very hard.
Right.
You know, there's been all this talk about elbows and injuries, and, you know, I think a lot of the discussion is, A, it's overuse, but B, it's velocity. And Lester, you know, he doesn't throw 97 either, but he used to. And now he still throws in the low 90s, so he's not Mark Burley either. So I get the wariness that this contract, you know, a year and a half into it would completely blow up in their faces. I mean, they saw John Lackey. They signed him 5 years, $82 million, and the first year was okay, and the second 2 years were a complete wash-up. You got negative value from him then.
Well,
so I can see the reticence at least.
I think Lackey is an interesting comparison, for a bunch of reasons. But specifically because, I mean, we all looked at that deal, after the first year per se, and thought, oh, well, all right. You know, he was a 2-3 win pitcher, depending on, who you look at, what stat you look at. And then in 2011, they ran him out there for, 160 innings. And he was awful. And I think the reason he was awful, I'm not breaking any new ground here, is that he was hurt. He probably shouldn't have been pitching. You wouldn't think, maybe the whole last half of that season. But, they needed somebody to take those innings, and I don't know the inner workings. You may. I don't know if he refused that, to say that he was hurt or whatever. But the point is, I think, looking at the contract as a whole, had the Red Sox, instead of running him out there, got him looked at and had the surgery that he eventually needed to have, maybe this contract is not, nearly as bad as it would appear to be now. And on top of that, he's signed because of that injury. You get this next year, where he is. I'm sort of veering away from John Lester here, but go with me for just a second. Where they get value because he has this this clause in his contract where he will play the next season on for whatever it is, $500,000-$600,000, and he's already been worth 2.5 wins this year, and we're only at the All-Star break. He's been really good. I don't know if losing a year, to a year and a half of a deal where the guy is, more or less good before and good after, is really such a horrible thing in the course of a long-term contract. You almost plan for it in a way.
Yeah, that's true. I think if the worst-case scenario with Lester was that they were going to lose a year somewhere in the middle, even if they couldn't get that year back, even if Lester looked at Lackey and said, I don't want to do that, and he has enough bidders where he doesn't have to, you're right. If they can get – because then you're basically getting 80% of your value back, which for that sort of contract, again, you take. That's,
yeah, absolutely.
If you get $80 million worth out of John Lester and you've paid him $100 million, given the Red Sox payroll, given that they have these young guys coming up and they have the money to not have to be exactly 100% efficient, you take that. I think the bigger concern is the Santana concern. I don't really even know what's going on with Sabathia, but these guys whose careers just ended at like 31 or 32.
Yeah.
So many of them in recent baseball history that, then all of a sudden you've got him, you're paying him for 4 more years at $23 million a pop, and you're just not going to get anything. He's Brandon Webb. And they know his shoulder, they know his elbow better than you or I do.
Yeah.
But there's so much history of pitchers just getting hurt completely out of nowhere that, people talk a lot about Lester being a workhorse and everything goes along with that, and that's true, but I don't know. The more you look around, the more you feel like, every pitcher is healthy till he's not, and you just have no idea when that's going to be.
No, I think that's fair, and so I'm sort of wrestling with this situation as both a fan and an analyst, and I find that the two hats are the analyst hat's getting smaller as we get closer to the deadline, and the fan hat's getting bigger, if that makes any sense. The Red Sox made a big deal last year about off-field issues, and the clubhouse and how they were together as a team, and the clubhouse was so tight, and that really helped them to, be successful on the field. We've heard a lot about how Lester is a great guy. He's a clubhouse leader now. He's taken control, of the pitching staff, and he's a good guy off the field too, with charitable works and he came up with the organization, et cetera, et cetera. It just seems like if you were going to sign a guy, at all to, this would be that guy. Everything is lined up for them to give him a contract and keep him in a Red Sox uniform. I looked at the Red Sox salary obligations going forward. I think next year they have about 80 million, 70 million, something like that on the books. Maybe that's even overstating it.
That's right there.
Okay. And then in 2016, they owe 13 point something million dollars. They owe Dustin Pedroia, you know, roughly $13 million, and they owe Clay Buchholz a buyout if they decide not to pick up his team option. That's it. They don't have any other salary obligation. Now, I mean, obviously, they have to field a team, so you know, they're going to end up spending money somewhere. But it just doesn't seem to make any sense. I know there's no question here. I'm just, like I said, I'm just struggling with this.
I see where you're going, and I understand why you're struggling with it, because you're right. And I think this is where some Red Sox fans across the spectrum, you know, a lot of the smarter Red Sox fans are wrestling with it, just like you, that are like, if you don't sign John Lester for $20 million a year when that's market value, who are you going to sign?
Yeah.
You know, that's because you got Pedroia way under market value. And at least, at the very least, John Henry, if he doesn't sign John Lester, seems to be saying, we will not pay pitchers past age 30. Because you're right. If they were going to sign anybody, you know, Lester's the guy you do. Because you're right. All the things about the clubhouse leader, I mean, it's dangerous to evaluate a guy too much off of his interactions with the media, but the way he's handled this whole contract situation this year has been remarkable. I mean, A, the fact that he's having a terrific year, but B, the fact that he's been stand-up about it. He's been thoughtful when discussing it. He's been clear about it. He's been honest about it. And all these things that it just seems like he's able to handle what is a very difficult, life-changing issue very, very easily. You know, that speaks to his character as well. So, yeah, if you're going to sign anybody, you're going to sign John Lester. But John Henry may be saying, like, look, we want to build from within. You know, pitchers don't make it past age 30. We want the reason we've got the Alan Websters and the Ruby De La Rosas and Henry Owens and all those guys. You know, you look at their draft classes the last 3 years. There's pitchers all over the place. The guys in low A, too. You know, Trey Ball last year, Jamie Callahan, Ty Buttrey. Some are working out better than others. But maybe that's just the big picture strategy is – we are going to build around pitchers in their 20s because they're a safer bet.
I guess. So that leads to the next question, which is, okay, so Lester is gone, and presumably some prospects are coming back, right? I mean, I don't obviously have any inside information on who they've been talking to or about which prospects would come back to Boston, but you know, I'm assuming they're not – whatever team is going to acquire John Lester is going to be in the pennant race. They're probably not dealing anyone off their major league roster that's going to affect the pennant race. So where do the Red Sox get production in their rotation next year?
Well, yeah, you're right. None of the guys they have now are ace-type starters. I mean, to be fair, until Lester the last – I mean, really, just the last calendar year, the second half of last year and then the playoffs, Lester was never regarded as an ace starter either. I mean, he was always sort of a really good two, and there were a lot of people who always said, you need to go get an ace, and they never really got an ace per se. I mean, the last time they had one of the top 10 pitchers in the game was Pedro Martinez, I would say. So you don't necessarily – I think the need for an ace is a little bit overblown, but then again – you know, maybe this is where you get somebody like that. Like if the Orioles will part with Kevin Gausman for John Lester, which would be a huge price. But you know, this is their year. This is a shot. Matt Wieter's contract is running out after next year. Like, you know, this is their chance. This is their window. You know, you go for it, and you maybe they can pry away Kevin Gausman, or they pry away, you know, a similar type prospect from somebody else that buttresses the offense a little bit. And then they supplement – you know, there's ways to go supplement the rotation without getting the best pitcher out there on the market. It requires some creativity, and maybe it requires trading away some of their young guys to go get somebody else's pitcher. You know, there's ways to do it. I think John Lester is certainly not the end-all, be-all. There's ways you could do it, whether it's getting a, you know, Taiwan Walker from Seattle, or maybe it's getting a bat and then just kind of patching together a rotation with John Lackey, Clay Buchholz, and some of your young guys. Maybe one veteran free agent like a Jorge De La Rosa.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of ways to get to the World Series, and there's a lot of ways to win the World Series, and we've seen it, you know, over the last decade, you know, different kinds of teams and different kinds of starting rotations, really. But when you think about, you know, the Red Sox and the way that they've won their three World Series, a huge part of it has been with real top-of-the-line starting pitchers. I mean, that was the, you know, the 04 Cardinals won, I forget how many games, 104 or something in the regular season. But they didn't have an ace pitcher on the staff. They were just such a good hitting team and fielding team. But once they ran up against Schilling and Pedro in the playoffs, that was it. And you know, then you can look to last year when, you know, when the Red Sox had you know, Lester and Lackey in the rotation, and you know, they were able to beat Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander in the playoffs, and then Michael Wacha and Adam Wainwright. So I kind of wonder if they're gonna, you know, throw a bunch of threes and a you know, first of all, if they're going to do that, get a whole bunch of threes, that's fine. But you need the offense to do that, and they don't have the offense to do that. I guess this moves us to next year. So, where, I mean, are they? Do they go on onto the free agent market and go after somebody like Scherzer or James Shields, or do you just try to patch from within? And I'm trying to figure out how the 2015 Red Sox are competitive without John Lester. That's my question.
and one of those things too, kind of addressing one of the points that was in there was, you know, one thing about John Lester too that I think we have to remember is that what John Lester is now is certainly not what John Lester will be going forward. This is his best season, and even what John Lester has been, you know, over the last 5 years on average, may not be what John Lester is going forward. So that's the search for an ace going forward in some ways is independent of John Lester, because I don't know how long, even if you sign him, I don't know how long you're counting on him to be that guy who could beat Adam Wainwright in the playoffs, or, you know, the equivalent.
Right.
But yeah, in terms of next year, I think, you know, I don't know. I'd be fascinated to see what they're thinking about. You know, maybe James Shields a little bit older, so you do one of those sort of short term big money deals with him because you have the flexibility. And, you know, he can pitch in the AL East. He'd be a really interesting guy. But then again, if you're comfortable paying James Shields, you know, $60 million for 3 years, say, or $70 million for 3 years or something like that, like, he's already 32 or 33. Like, you know, then you go back to, why not just pay Lester?
Right.
Those years too. You know, some of it's that you at least you already know that Shields has gotten through those years. So you're only on the hook. If everything falls apart, you're only on the hook for 2 or 3 years as opposed to 5. But still. In terms of next year, I think this winter is when we get the next blockbuster trade. I think it's time that they've got this massive pitchers. They just got two more from the Giants. You know, I don't know that they're necessary. I think they're probably looking best available player on this trade market for Lester. You know, you don't necessarily need, there's certain spots you don't really need a guy, but you know, if they get back a pitcher, people are going to say, why do they keep getting pitchers? They need a bat. I think you're going to see a blockbuster trade for a bat this winter, because you're not going to get one on the free agent market. The free agent market for bats this winter is terrible. Like, Nelson Cruz is far and away the best market, and he's going to get, and the bidding will go accordingly because he's the best available. So it's not good. I think that's where you're going to hear a lot about Giancarlo Stanton. You know, there's a reason you keep hearing that, and the Red Sox have accumulated a lot of assets. I think you're going to keep hearing about Stanton. You know, the sort of dark horse that I always think about are the two guys in the Atlanta Braves whose contracts are expiring after this season, Justin Upton and Jason Hayward, both of whom would fit nicely in a corner outfield spot in Boston. And that's a sort of, you know, you trade two young pitchers and a, you know, if it takes Mookie Betts, Alan Webster, and Henry Owens to get somebody like that, where you have the pitching depth to deal from, you know, that's the sort of deal that starts to make sense for this Red Sox team to get somebody young that you could probably sign to an extension, but they're still young enough that extension is not going to take them through age 35. But to be still building around those young players in their 20s, even if it's their late 20s, rather than spending a bunch of money on guys who are, you know, 32, 33, 34.
I looked up Upton. He's not a free agent next year. He's $50 million or through 2015. So he's got one more year left on it.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the idea that the guys who are right, these would be guys who have one more year left.
Oh, I understand. I'm sorry.
So they'd make, that would be a trade. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Hayward's the same way.
Okay.
I think Stanton's got two more years.
Yeah, that sounds correct to me. Yeah. So wow, that'll be interesting to see where they go with all that. Do you think that there is enough talent? Well, here, let me back up a quick second. So the criticism that I've heard of all the pitchers that the Red Sox have, you know, from Owens and Barnes and Renato, et cetera. I mean, and they have an amazing group of young pitchers in the upper minors, but the criticism is that none of them are a one or a two. They're all threes or fours or bullpen arms. And, I mean, you know, you can listen to experts on this, and certainly they know more than I do. What I do know is that a lot of times people make mistakes about the stuff like this. So, you know, you add a new pitch or someone loses velocity and things go in different directions. But that said, putting you on the spot, I suppose, do you think that one of those guys in the minor leagues is, you know, is a two or a something like that, you know, someone that the Red Sox can, you know, put up towards the top of their rotation so that they don't have to go out and make a bunch of trades or are we stuck with just a bunch of back end guys?
I think there's some guys that could be at least, you know, two or three. I think that's the thing about Owens, people keep saying he's a two or a three. Like, there's not 30 ones, you know, right. There aren't, every team doesn't have an ace. And, you know, like I was saying about Lester, for most of his career, he was not an ace. He was not in the same – he was certainly not viewed the way Clayton Kershaw is viewed now. He wasn't viewed the same way Verlander has been viewed. He wasn't that top-tier guy. And that's why sort of the other advantage to trading him now is that this is the peak of his value, at least in terms of his ability. So it's okay if Henry Owens turns into what John Lester was for a bunch of years. But – I think the most important thing that Ben Cherington and his staff are doing now and will continue to do is figuring out which of those guys, those young pitchers, are going to make it and which guys aren't, and then finding a team that maybe values the guys you don't like as much, as, and then trading to those teams to get commensurate value back, and then being right about that. Yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly difficult thing, but the Braves did it so well for so many years. Like, you always remember when the Braves had these pitchers coming up, and the ones they kept were good, and the ones they traded away tended not to be. And it's a really difficult thing to do, but if they could get somebody who really believes in, you know, just picking a name at random, Alan Webster, somebody who really likes Alan Webster, if the Red Sox don't think Alan Webster is going to make it, that they could make him, you know, the second piece or the first piece in a significant trade, then you make that trade and your team gets better. And then it doesn't burn you because you were right about Alan Webster and he's just a back-end guy.
Right, right.
Now, if you really like all of them, then trade whoever somebody else likes most. Like, with the inventory they have, if the Marlins this winter said, you know, we love Henry Owens, we have to have Henry Owens. There's some people who look at Henry Owens as a deal-breaker. Unless the Red Sox really love Henry Owens, you know, if you could get Stanton for, I don't know, Owens and Mookie Betts, right. Like – if that's what it would take, you know, I think you have to do that as long as if you don't see Owens as a future Cy Young Award winner. So that's where the evaluation comes in. That's where, you know, a lot of people have strong opinions. It's hard to have strong opinions. These teams know these players a lot better than we do. But, you know, we're not held to our opinions the way the teams are either. So the big thing that Cherington has that he has to do this winter and going forward is, yeah, figure out which of those pitchers he values enough to keep and which ones he can get value back from if there's somebody else that you know, if the Pirates really love one of those guys and they need pitching and you say, well, we'd do Josh Bell for him if there's somebody they really like something like that, you know, that's how you're going to make or break the team going forward.
Brian, I have to thank you so much for your time today. I'm very appreciative of you coming on and talking Red Sox here. We're up against about a half hour, which is what I promised you. I would release you after that. is there real quick, if I may, are there other players besides Lester that are you expecting a big fire sale? Do you think they're going to trade off seven or eight guys or is this just going to be a high end trade that happens at the deadline for the Red Sox?
No, I think they've got to do quite a bit. I mean, they have to field a team going forward, but there's guys like, I mean, Andrew Miller just brings back too much value if you haven't signed him yet to to keep him around. Maybe you keep Koji because you'll qualify him after this season, and that brings him back for one more year. But, you know, someone like Burke Badenhop could help somebody. Someone like Johnny Gomes could help somebody. I don't see those guys sticking around because it just – there's value to be had from contenders. And Lester's the big one, but there's no real reason to keep Johnny Gomes on a team that's going nowhere if there's a team that needs a lefty bat or a bat that hits lefties, excuse me, like Johnny Gomes does. And, you know, that has value. And I think you get something worthwhile. And again, you're still accumulating assets. And then it puts you in a better position to make a blockbuster trade this winter.
All right. Well, thanks again, Brian, for your time today. And, this has been the Over the Monster podcast. We will be back to analyze all the terrifying things that have happened over the last week next week. So we'll talk to you then.